And welcome to the inaugural podcast of Highballs and Lowbrows. It is our mainly music-based opinion podcast based out of the University of Northern Iowa, currently in the Oak Room at the Mock Reunion. And we have our full cast here today, minus Sarah Draffin, who is on vacation in Chicago over the weekend. So we're going to have her call in a little bit later for some advice. But anyway, we're going to go around the room really quick. Just tell us who we are and, you know, what we like to do. So we're going to start with our man, David Farrell.
Thanks, Reese. I am the David Farrell. I work at Panera Bread, age 20. I am currently a business major at Hawkeye Community College, and I'll be transferring to UNI next year.
I'm Brendan Wood. I'm a nothing major. It means I'm undecided.
He's a nothing man.
And I work at Panera Bread, too, with these two losers. And that's about it for me. I got nothing else going on.
Well, just like Brendan just said, I'm one of those two losers. I'm Reese Talbot, or Reese Lloyd Talbot for long. And anyway, age 19, gonna be 20 in a couple months. And, you know, I'm just really psyched to be here. And last, but certainly not least, because that would be very sexist of us, is Chantel Garwood.
Thanks, Reese. I'm Chantel Garwood, age 19, almost 20 as well. I work at Nana Rosa's in Rhinebeck. It's a great pizza place. Check it out.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm also attending UNI for choral music ed.
Well, there we go. Now you know the gang. I'm sure Sarah will be able to call us in later so you can hear a little bit from her. Anyway, let's move into our first topic of discussion today. What's going on in the world of pop culture? The biggest story I found in the last few weeks is they're going to be killing off a member of the Fantastic Four. For those of you who don't know, the Fantastic Four are one of like the prime Marvel cliques, you know. You got your Spider-Man, your Iron Man, the Hulk. I'd say Fantastic Four is up there with them. Wouldn't you guys?
Yeah, they're probably the biggest group. Even though the movies weren't that good, I don't think. They kind of got a little too kiddish for me, but they are definitely part of the Marvel culture. They're pretty much one of the staples of that, of Stan Lee's creations. But yeah, when Reese told me that they were killing off one character, I immediately didn't think it was going to be... I didn't know who to think, actually. I didn't know if it was going to be the Thing or the Torch or Invisible Girl or Mr. Incredible himself.
Mm-hmm.
So
just right off the bat, I already know who they're going to kill off. Who do you guys think they're going to kill off?
I'm not big into the whole Fantastic Four thing, but if I had to take a guess, I'd probably say Human Torch, just because he's a weird guy. Get rid of him, you know what I'm saying? What do you think, Brendan?
Get rid of the Torch.
He gets all the chicks.
Who played him in the movies?
Chris Evans.
What else has he done?
He was, he was in a couple, you know, like just like a couple of little suspense thrillers, you know.
With Pauly Shore?
Pauly Shore! Terrible movies.
Anyway, so who do you think they're going to call up Wood?
Oh, Chris Evans is going to be Captain America. That's right. Okay. But anyways, I think it's either going to come down to the Human Torch or the Invisible Girl. Because they're probably, out of those four, they're the most vulnerable. Because the Thing is basically indestructible.
I disagree.
And Mr. Incredible... It's basically, you know, he makes the...
I disagree, because there's only one girl, right?
Yeah.
So it would
you
be...
can't kill off the chick.
Right, you can't kill off the chick.
That's just sexist.
That's it like is. Killing That's off sexist. Chantel in this group.
That means...
Which is likely to happen, but...
They could pick up Hillary Clinton.
Well...
she'd make a great Fantastic Fourth.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Doom's wife.
Dr. Doom's wife. Shani, who do you think they're going to kill off?
I have no idea. I don't know about any of these things, but knowing that there's one girl, there's no way they're going to kill off one girl.
Okay, I'll give you the synopsis then. There is a strong dude made of rock, there is a flexible dude made of rubber, and there is a fire guy. Out of those three, who do you think they'd kill?
The rock guy.
The rock guy?
Yeah, because he's going to crumble either way, right?
That's true. Well, anyway, I read into the article, and my initial thoughts were... they were going to take out Mr. Fantastic. Because I know he's the one that kind of is, you know, the brains of Fantastic Four, but I don't know. They've killed off Cyclops a couple times in the X-Men comics, you know, so...
Oh, yeah.
But in the Marvel Universe, at least, being dead is kind of like... I don't know. It's that whole reincarnation. It's like you're not
soap
dead
opera
for long.
Dead.
Yeah, like right. soap opera dead. Right. But I don't know. I thought they'd kill off him. I wouldn't think they'd kill off the Thing just because he's the big. Besides, you know, Human Torch is orange, obviously, but you
he's
know,
unique.
Yeah, he's unique. He's kind of like the face of the Fantastic
Four. He's the rock that holds them together.
But in the end, they are going to kill off Human Torch.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I was half right.
Yeah, you were.
I guess two.
Was I calling
him Mr. Incredible that whole time?
You might have called him Mr. Incredible.
I was thinking of The Incredibles. Sorry, that's a great movie.
See,
but
now Michael Eisner is going to come after you and get you.
Yeah.
So
Michael Eisner and Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's going to be the Human Torch, which I know either any character would surprise me. Human Torch is kind of, you know, like their public figure. Like, he doesn't really like to stay hidden at all.
That's true.
He's definitely out there. He's got the money. He's got the women.
I know there's been a lot of, I've been reading a couple articles on this. There's been a lot of, like, public backlash on this, you know. The fact that they'd kill any of the Fantastic Four. A lot of people said they'll stop by in the comics. A lot of people said, you know, like we just said, he'll come back. It's a Marvel comic. I do think killing one member of the Fantastic Four is a little bigger than, say, killing off someone from the X-Men, you know, because there's how many X-Men and, like, what is it, the Brotherhood's kind of like the anti-X-Men, but they're, like, basically, they fight together sometimes, so it's, like, it's not, like, just killing off one of them.
Sometimes, yeah.
And they're labeled the Fantastic Four, so mm-hmm. they're going to go down to three?
Yeah.
That makes no sense. So are they going to change the name in the comic? Of course not.
I think, they kind of have a fifth. I think Cable is, one of their kids, though. Like, from the future. I don't know. I'll have to cross-reference that with my comic expert, Gage Stoneman. You know?
Oh, gosh.
But, yeah, I'm pretty sure Cable's one of their kids. But so, you know, it would make sense maybe for a little bit if, you know, Cable joined the Fantastic Four for it. But, you know, he might work on his own. So
another theory I have, and this goes outside of the movie, Fantastic Four. It leads to Captain America, which I mentioned earlier. It could be maybe because Chris Evans is playing a whole nother Marvel character, Captain America, one of the biggest comic book characters of all time. And this is just something to think about. Maybe he just wants less time to concentrate on the Human Torch and more time on Captain America. Because he'll have to put a lot of effort into Captain America to pull that off.
Didn't they just kill Captain America 2, though, in the comics?
What do you mean?
Isn't that
pretty recent?
Yeah, I thought they killed off Captain America.
They just stopped making it? Like,
yeah.
They shut down production?
Well, not shut down production.
Not necessarily.
You never shut down in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about that.
Mm-hmm. Dave, what did you hear about that?
Oh, I just, you know, heard it on the news or whatever. Just internet. Rumor. They're going to kill off Captain America. That's all I heard.
Yeah. They killed Superman. I mean, it's at the DC universe, but they killed Superman,
everything,
too.
Yeah, it seems like everything comic right now is Ryan Reynolds. Because he's playing, like, what? Upwards of around 4 million superheroes?
Yeah. Not
yeah.
counting the guy in Wade.
Give or take.
Yeah, more or less. But, I mean, yeah, Green Lantern, Deadpool, Weapons 11. You know, he's got it going right now. And not to mention non-superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably the actor of not just last year, but the last maybe 2 or 3 years.
Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know he's on the cover of EW, you know. My sister has his picture in her room a couple times. He's in I think Water Wings, a snorkel. He's got a big old, you know, super soaker gun. So, yeah, he's a pretty hot commodity right now.
Segwaying on now. There is a dance sensation that is sweeping the nation. And no, it is not the hop. And it is not that history of dance in 5 minutes from whatever it is.
It's not the hand jive.
It's not the hand jive. And it's not the
Soldier
Jersey
Boy?
Shore fist pump. Well, it kind of is the Jersey Shore fist pump.
Part of it is.
It is the interlude.
I mean, it's reached the band itself.
For now, just the state.
Just the state. I mean, just the conference.
Well, to be honest, I know we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. I saw a video online. Indiana Wesleyan got a bunch of people together, and they did the interlude.
Uh-huh.
It's a video on YouTube now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's not huge. So I guess we could say the Midwest, we're going to...
Yeah, colleges are finding out about this.
Okay, so for those of us who don't know what it is...
Well, I'll walk you through it. The interlude is a song, a brief song, about a minute and a half, by the metalcore, deathcore, techno band called Attack Attack. They're a band that... normally people don't know what they do. They have the dirtiest vocals around, and it's basically just a dance tune that, you know, there's different sections of where there's different dance for each part of the song. Like, what's it called? There's like the warm up, and then for like 15 seconds, yeah, and then there's the actual interlude.
It's the camp.
Yeah, it's like clapping, and then dancing, and then there's like
almost kind of
robot
a Johnny
ninja.
Bravo move.
Yeah,
it is almost
Johnny Bravo move. And then the robot ninja, and then Jersey Shore fist pump.
Oh, don't forget the sparkle.
Yeah,
the sparkle. Yeah.
Where you basically just have a seizure for
You have a standing seizure.
Half a minute.
And then it's a Revenge of the Interlude, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Revenge of the Interlude.
And you have the Jersey Shore fist pump in there.
If you want to find more on what the video actually looks like, there's an instructional video, which is where the base of operations came from back in November. If you go onto YouTube and you look up Interlude Dance, there should be an instructional video under it should be posted by a guy named... I think it's Mr. Goldsmith or something like that.
That sounds right.
Yeah, it's because it's Ian
Goldsmith.
Yeah, he was the guy that started it. Mm-hmm. So if you go online, you can see that. The brief history behind the dance was they invented it in November, and they wanted to do it at one of our basketball games. Mm-hmm. So they went and talked to the athletic department, and they said, you know, can you play the song? And they said, well, we're kind of skeptical, but if you can get, you know, a good group of people to do the song at a women's basketball game, then maybe think about doing it more regularly. Now, for those of you who don't know, we here at UNI, we love our women's basketball program. We love all of our sports teams. You know, the attendance isn't always up for those games. As I understand, they brought over 100 students to the student section for that game, which is kind of unheard of here. Oh, and yeah. They had them play the interlude, and they were so excited at like the atmosphere the dance brought that they decided to try it out the next week on Wednesday against our game against Creighton.
The McDermotts, we do not like them. It's safe to say.
Not at all.
Not at all.
But the whole thing ended up being a success.
Yeah.
There was a very large number of students participating in this dance, and there are several videos of
quite
it on YouTube if you want to go check that out and watch it. And the band Attack Attack has put it on their Twitter.
At least over, I know this isn't, you know, considered Chocolate Rain or Bedroom Intruder, you know, viral, but considering it's a video, you know, coming from you and I, over the last 3 days, it's garnered over, I think, 4,000 or 5,000 hits. Like, just since last night, it's gone up, I think, 2,500 hits. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, it's only at 25,000, or no, not even 25, maybe 22,000 right now, but, you know, it's...
But for a school our size.
That's good. No matter what way you look at it, that's pretty impressive.
In the state of Iowa.
Yeah, right. I mean,
coming from this state.
For those of you who still don't know where UNI is, we're about to turn off the entire state of Kansas. We're that team that beat Kansas in the NCAA tournament last year.
That's the highlight of our life, basically.
What up?
That's Kurt Warner, man.
Kurt Warner's
a boss.
One of the best quarterbacks who ever lived.
Yeah, we're not afraid to say that.
Yeah.
We're homers.
Ashton Kutcher. He's cute.
Did he go here?
No, he didn't go here.
He's from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. He's from Iowa.
Yeah,
but
was that not the general idea?
So is Tom Arnold.
I'm from Iowa, but you know.
John Wayne's from Iowa.
Yeah, John Wayne's from
Iowa. But let's not live in the past.
Indians.
I'm going to have a remake of True Grit.
I'm already up.
So, anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will have the our segment, also known as Yard by Yard with Brendan Wood. Talk about our sports. We've got the Super Bowl matchup between the Packers and the Steelers to look forward to. That's about the sports arc we have for you. So we'll be right back.
I know that I have many thoughts and things to say, but I know that my words are coming out in the wrong way. I promise I won't talk anymore. I know that I have many thoughts and things to say, but I know that my words are coming out in the wrong way. I realize now that I should
shut up,
'cause I am blank. Listening.
I am blank. I am blank. Like he said, the guy from Queen said, nothing really matters to me. So do what you want and say what y'all say. I haven't been listening. Thoughts and things to say, but I know that my words are coming out the wrong way. I promise I won't talk anymore. And I think so many things that I'll never ever say. The world's just better off that way. This is me bottling myself up. This is me bottling myself up.
And we are back. The track you just heard was I Am Blank from the band J-E-L-L-I. It's indie music, so unfortunately, I don't know if it's pronounced Jelly or, like I said, J-E-L-L-I. Probably. So, indie fans out there, I'm sorry. I don't mean to offend.
Now it's time for Woody Yard by Yard.
But anyway, the first topic in our Yard by Yard with Brendan Wood
and David Farrell,
and David Farrell, I guess, is going to be the anticipation of the Super Bowl matchup between the Steelers and the Packers.
Go Pack, go!
First off, shut up. I'm a Bears fan.
Yeah, how's that working out?
I'm the one and only Bears fan here.
Yeah, that's so stupid though. We're from Cedar Falls, Iowa.
Exactly.
They're closer. Anyways,
by like 2 hours.
Okay. But nonetheless, the Green Bay Packers versus the Pittsburgh Steelers in the Super Bowl 45. This is, you know, regardless of who I'm a fan of, this is going to be a great matchup, I think. Packers are, they have the momentum, but, I mean, the Steelers have the championships to back it up.
Well, the Packers have some championships to back it up, too.
Packers have the most titles.
The most titles, not the most Super Bowls, though.
Yeah, Steelers have the most Super Bowls, David.
No, they're tied with the Cowboys.
Not come
Steelers have the most Super Bowls outright?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, the confidence in this room.
Chantel, okay. Okay, let's ask you some football questions.
Who's the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, Chantel?
Well, it used to be Favre, and I'm in love with him, so.
Yeah, well, he's...
I'm sorry, it's not you, Brennan.
Has he sent you a picture of his John Connor?
He just got his pension check in the mail, so.
Maybe.
Who's the current quarterback?
I have no idea. This is not fair.
There you go. There's our sexist minute for the day. But
anyway,
Dave, you want to talk about what happened in the NFC Championship game? What are your thoughts and feelings on that?
Green Bay got off to an early lead. Just dominated. Then, of course, you know, Cutler goes down with a knee injury. A lot of controversy about that, judging his toughness. I mean, you know, if he's hurt, he's hurt. He's not going to play. Anyway, what's his face?
Caleb Haney.
Right. Todd Collins came in for a while. He wasn't doing anything. He was there for like, what, two series?
Two series, no complete passes.
Mm-hmm.
Then Haney comes in. Actually plays really well.
Oh, yeah. I had some hope.
Two interceptions.
I don't know if I'd say he played really well. That one touchdown he had was kind of I don't want to say it was a fluke. He probably would end up throwing a touchdown pass anyway, but that was just kind of like confusion and blown coverage.
Probably a
first or second one.
He threw two,
or did he have one touchdown?
He had one because Forte ran in the other one. Because I kind of feel that touchdown he threw was just blown coverage. Because the one guy,
the Packers guy coming across the field thought that guy was going to make the tackle. So he just stopped. But then the guy he thought was going to make the tackle got juked. And it's just kind of they looked at each other right afterwards saying, what?
Yeah, I don't really think you can call anything a fluke in that game because that was – it was a bizarre game because we got down to our third-string quarterback, the Bears did. And I wouldn't quite call it domination. It may have felt that way, but, I mean, the Packers didn't lead by more than two possessions.
You can call that one interception ride just a fluke, the one where the guy bounced off his foot.
That was incredible. I thought. I saw that, and me and a friend of mine who's a Bears fan, we watched. We just freaked out when we saw that. We were just jumping for joy.
Got a reputation mostly based on luck.
That's maybe true, but it was unfortunate that Haney threw that pick to whatever that 400-pound guy was. B.J. Raji.
B.J. Yeah. Raji.
And then he shook his in the... I'm sorry, butt grease. I can't swear. He was doing his little celebration. I was just like,
the epic celebration.
I realized, Nikes.
If the Raji dance and the interlude join forces, it'll be bigger than Justin Bieber, and you know it.
Baby. No.
Nope.
Not here.
Nope.
This is football.
But anyway, onto the other game, the AFC Championship game, the Jets and the Steelers. There was a lot of anticipation, there was a lot of belief that the Jets could come out and actually win this one after handling the Patriots the week before. What actually did happen, though, was the Steelers jumped out to a lead. The Jets were able to chip away at it, and they ended up losing kind of late in the game. So did you guys actually watch that one? I watched that one.
Well,
I watched most of it.
I was with you, Reese, when we were watching Iron Man at the same time. And, like, we saw the score. It was 7-0 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we changed it over to Iron Man. And when there was a commercial break, we changed it back to the game. It was 22-0 Steelers. And I said, what? And then Reese looked up and he said the exact same thing. We didn't know what went on. I know the Steelers are just so overpowering in the playoffs. They're one of those teams that can just bear down. Unfortunately,
that first half was just a butt kicking.
That was.
Steelers just took it to them with the run game.
I'm sorry if you're not a Big Ten fan listening, but the Steelers, in my opinion, are kind of the Big Ten team in the NFL. They're the nose to the grindstone, beat you with,
solid defense.
Yeah, solid defense and brute force instead of, speed and quickness. But what do you guys take out of that game? Do you think, A, Sean Green is the back they should be focusing on right now instead of LT? Do you think... Sean Green's going to have a good future there. Do you think he's going to be traded somewhere? And B, two seasons in, two AFC Championship games later, no victories yet in that, do you think Mark Sanchez is going to wind up being, I don't want to say a legendary quarterback, but kind of one of the premier quarterbacks in the league, like a Rivers or a Breeze or something like that?
Well, let's start with the whole LT Sean Green thing. Next year is going to be interesting if they don't play football. LT could be done. This could be his last year. Mm-hmm. And obviously they'll build a team around Sean Green. As for Mark Sanchez, he's from USC, solid program. I don't think he's that great of an NFL quarterback, but he's a winner under Coach Ryan. So I'll give him that. I don't like the guy, but he's a winner.
Yeah, I don't like many players from the Jets, whether it's Rex Ryan or just Mark Sanchez's style overall, and Darrell Revis with his whole...
Revis Island.
Yeah, Revis Island.
Whatever that is.
But it's funny, because I was thinking that Sean Green would be a player that'd be a hot trade in the offseason for a more speedy running back. Because I know LT is past his prime. All know that. Mm-hmm. He still can... He still has the potential to put up a solid season. I think he's still at that age where, he's kind of hit the Favre kind of thing. I hate to bring up Brett Favre. I'm sorry. I apologize in advance. But,
sorry, Shane.
but where Favre went to the Jets, actually, went to a different team, didn't do so well, but then when he came back, dominated. He put up his best season.
He was very efficient.
Yeah, he's very efficient, and he set all kinds of PRs for himself. But and then a season after that, he just his downfall just began.
Mm-hmm.
He just went into a free fall.
And I know there's a lot of argument with that, that one good season he had with the Vikings, how much of that was Favre versus Favre playing in a dome and the young talent he had around him. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I still say last year the Vikings were the best team in the NFL. They should have won the Super Bowl. And Brett Favre throwing that interception kind of only adds, you know, more strength to the argument that it wasn't Brett Favre, it was the team around Brett Favre. But getting back onto the topic with the Jets, when they had just picked up Sanchez and Green in the draft, I remember saying this to at least one of you guys in the back of Panera doing dishes, that the Jets would definitely be a team to watch. And I was going to jump on the bandwagon, mostly because, you know, I'm from Iowa. I love Sean Green. He's the man.
Oh, yeah.
Sean Green shed a ton of weight, it seems, in the offseason between college and
the
pros.
He's a different back from when he was in college at Iowa.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I almost want to compare him to someone like a Sproles.
No, not that fast.
He's not nearly that fast.
I think he's still got some of his aggressiveness, like to punch through the pile, mm-hmm. like he had in Iowa. Because, I mean, he could still shed tacklers like no one else.
He's strong.
Oh, God, he's strong. He's going to be up there. He's going to be one of those backs to watch out for the next 5 years.
And, you know, that's why some people think they brought in LT. They think Sean Green, at least the Sean Green in the NFL, is a lot like LT in his prime because – LT, I'd say, was more of a runner that would kind of choose to run through you than run around you, you know,
first
and last.
Because he had the speed to do it.
Mm-hmm. Sanchez, on the other hand, though, I'm skeptical to drink the Sanchez Kool-Aid. That's right, I said drink the Kool-Aid.
We hate it when he says that, by the way.
The reason is, if you look at, I'm going to call USC's decade of the 2000s an empire. I think USC had an empire this past decade. They had their four big quarterbacks. They had Carson Palmer, Matt Leinart, John David Booty, and Mark Sanchez. And I suppose you could argue Matt Barkley for one season. I'm not a fan of Matt Barkley still. I don't buy into him. But let's look what happened to the quarterbacks. Carson Palmer, very successful, won the Heisman Trophy. He went to the Bengals. He got injured. What was it? Rookie or sophomore season there?
I think so. I remember him getting injured. I don't know what season it was.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's kind of like the Madden curse where quarterbacks that come out of USC just don't produce.
Yeah,
part of that could be the system. You never know.
Because
they have all the tools they need. They just don't produce.
USC gets a lot of good players. Getting good players can make it a lot easier to win games and make it seem like you have good coaching. Not saying Pete Carroll and his staff didn't put together a good program down there, but well, you know, it's just like what other happened to the other quarterbacks. Matt Leinart, he won the Heisman once, didn't he? He won the Heisman.
Yeah.
He was in that Reggie Bush era. He went on to play for the Cardinals. Everyone thought he would be the man there, but kind of failed down there, to be honest. Kurt Warner took over, took him to a Super Bowl, and had a couple of good seasons. And, you know, Matt Leinart, he's just kind of drifted off into obscurity. John David Booty, did that guy even get drafted?
I don't even know. I've heard his name a few times. Like, I'm a college football fan, but I didn't hear John David Booty's name much at all.
I just remember him because he sounded like Forrest Gump. Mama said these my magic cleats.
So, a nice southern drawl.
Yeah. Yep. And Mark Sanchez, he didn't win the Heisman, but he was touted to be one of the top picks in that draft. Matt Stafford went above him to the Lions. But Matt Stafford really hasn't done much either. You know, so
he's been injured.
Yeah, he has been injured. He plays for the Lions. So, you know, I think it's still far too early to see how good of a quarterback he's going to be. You know, call me back in 2-3 years if he's made at least one more AFC championship game, and I'll say, you know, maybe start sipping the Kool-Aid. But yeah, so who do you guys think? Last thing on this topic, Steelers and Packers. Is Aaron Rodgers going to be able to be stopped? He's playing in that dome. As good as he is for an out-weather quarterback, you know, he's also very dangerous, as we saw in that Falcons game, in a dome.
Right.
So what do you think is going to be the big turning point in this game? What's going to decide it?
Well, first and foremost, Aaron Rodgers' decision-making. That's mm-hmm. going to be huge. He has the best receiving core in the league, I think,
in my opinion. No arguing there.
You know, the running game is still kind of whatever. You know, they found a guy in Starks who is decent.
Open up the play action, yeah.
I just think the speed of Green Bay, offensively and defensively, will be way too much for Pittsburgh. I think it'll be a great game. Probably down to the wire. We'll see what Big Ben does. I don't know.
Now, interesting fact. Green Bay has not trailed any team this year by more than 7 points at any time. Do you think that could change this weekend? Or not this weekend. Sorry, next weekend when they play in the Super Bowl?
I don't think so. I think I agree with Dave. It'll be a close one. But if Big Ben shows up, and if James Harrison and that D-line show up for the Steelers, then I think there's no way the Packers can stop them. Because I just think that the Steelers are too good in playoffs and in the Super Bowl. With or without Santonio Holmes, who basically was their salvation in the Super Bowl versus the Cardinals.
Right, Big Ben is a proven winner. Yes. He has two Super Bowls.
And right he can now. Overcome diversity.
Not a
with
fan.
With all his, with the suspension that he had.
In the motorcycle season, helmet incident a couple years ago.
All that stuff. He can overcome.
Accusations.
Oh, yeah. He can put all that stuff behind him and just focus on the biggest game in the world.
An interesting thing I think about this, though, is this Packers team does remind me a lot of that Arizona Cardinals team that took them down to the wire in that Super Bowl. And if you remember, that was a pretty high-scoring Super Bowl. I mean, it wasn't like into the 40s, but...
Yeah, for a Super Bowl, it was high-scoring.
I mean, that was played in a dome. It was played in a dome? Oh, well, there's a foot in my mouth. I thought it was played in a dome, but anyway,
it
wasn't.
It was in Tampa.
Well, there you
I
go.
I mean, warm weather.
Yeah, warm weather. So...
Yeah. Perfect conditions.
Dome-like conditions. Kurt Warner... kind of picked him apart. I'm not going to say he played, you know, a Joe Montana game, but Kurt Warner picked him apart. This Packers team reminds me a lot of them. Really good, really fast receivers. A running game that's good enough. The interesting thing about this matchup is usually in the Super Bowl, I feel like there is at least one team where you feel the whole season that this is an elite team and this is a team that's going to be in the Super Bowl. The feeling I get with both of these teams, I don't have a feeling that either of these teams is, you know, elite or this is kind of a godly team. Because you can go back a couple of years, you know, the Patriots, I'd say, had out of those three victories they had two teams that I felt were elite. Last year, you know, you had the Saints and the Vikings. I felt they were elite. Well, the Rams back, you know, beginning of the decade, I felt those were elite teams to beat. I think these are just two very good teams. And I'm a huge Packers fan, but I'm not sure if Green Bay's going to pull it out. I like them to pull it out, but the Steelers are just – you saw them play everyone, you know, even the Ravens twice this year, three times this year. You know, that's a smash-mouth organization. Yeah.
The Packers aren't anything special in my mind. They don't have anything special. I don't think their receivers are that fast. They can get open, but they're not that fast.
What are you talking about?
Okay, Donald Driver, how old is he?
Donald Driver is a great route runner. Greg Jennings, though, he will burn you.
Great route runner, but that doesn't mean they're fast. Okay, the Steelers. Obviously, Troy Polamalu. Hall of Fame, James Harrison, who can, no matter how big he is on the line, he can stop the pass. He can stop the pass. And I'm not a Steelers fan, so I don't know much about their defense.
The thing is, though, the Steelers are getting old.
They are getting old. They have age. But that might be the thing, though. That might be the thing. They have age, which brings experience into the picture.
This isn't like the NBA and the Celtics, though. Athleticism plays a lot bigger role in football than it does in basketball. Chantel's giving me the bird right now because she loves the Celtics. I'm a huge fan of the Celtics. Kevin Garnett. I like Kevin Garnett.
But I like Nate Robinson because he's the man.
Shaq Daddy.
All right, so the general idea, Reese, who do you think will win?
And
not
score.
Who you want to win.
And
who do you
a
want
score,
to win?
Ballpark score.
I'm gonna say the Packers squeak this one out. I'm gonna say it's gonna be 31-27 Green Bay.
We picked the same score.
Oh yeah, there we go. It's a sign.
I say Steelers squeak this one out. I think it's gonna be close either way. But look at our predictions for the BCS championship. We thought that was going to be a high-powered.
I didn't. High scoring. I called
you,
the BCS
yeah,
championship
you
like it was.
Nevertheless, it was close. But the Super Bowl, 24-20, Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay.
On top, and it's not going to be like defensive fourth quarter. It's going to be I think the Steelers are going to pull out a score within the last minute.
Well, when we come back, we will move on to our main topic of the day, the whole Mike Portnoy, Avenged Sevenfold, Dream Theater love triangle going on there. Well, it's more of a hate triangle. Brendan Wood will be talking in specifics about that, talk about their new drummer. And while we're gone, we'll leave you some music.
Put your house in order, my friend. Soon your life will come to an end. With this task, you will ask, have you done more harm than good? Self-reflection wasn't your style. Now you put your conduct on trial. Will it sting? Done in good faith. Did you leave your loot in the safe? With you wealth, ask yourself, have you done more harm than good? This is what you get. Hateful to you, did you bring to people you knew? Anyhow, questions now, have you done more harm than good? This is what you get.
I'd like to thank PodSafe Audio for all of our audio music for this show. Due to copyright laws, we enjoy listening and playing lots of indie music on this show. But anyway, Brendan, let's talk about the main musical topic of the day, the Mike Portnoy situation with Avenged Sevenfold. Can you give us some background information on that?
Well, I'll give you some background on Mike Portnoy because I bet half of you don't even know who he is. He's one of, if not the greatest drummer of all time. I'm not going to put him over Neil Peart just yet, Neil Peart of Rush, but he is definitely up there. You need to check out some of his solos on YouTube or anything with his band, with his former band, Dream Theater. Mike Portnoy, a lot of you probably know Avenged Sevenfold more than Dream Theater. Avenged Sevenfold was converted rock who recently, about a year ago, suffered the loss of their drummer, The Rev.
Very good drummer.
Yeah, he was a very good drummer as well, and he fit into their band. I was into Avenged Sevenfold back in my junior high days when City of Evil came out, and I watched documentaries and The Rev and their guitar player Sinister Gates and M Shadows, their vocalist. They were all a really tight group, and they put out some good music from 2005 to 2007 when their eponymous album came out. But after The Rev died, they were looking for a drummer to complete their recording for their album Nightmare, which came out last year, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Over July.
Last year. And they found Mike Portnoy, a great progressive rock drummer. Very technical, and he has a huge set. Mm-hmm. He has an absolutely monstrous set. I don't know if it goes around 360 degrees, but it is huge.
It's pretty close.
It is absolutely huge. And so he did recording for them. I mean, you can definitely, you definitely know it's him from a couple of his songs.
Mm-hmm. Like, just listening to the chorus on the song Nightmare, you know, you can...
Yeah, the chorus and the opening of Nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
The fast drum beats, I don't even think the Rev could pull off those technical beats. I know the Rev is great, but he's more the kind of Travis Barker drummer where, I mean, he was more concerned about the whole music rather than just complex drumming. But anyways, Dream Theater kicked him out.
Well, he left Dream Theater.
He left Dream Theater, but Dream Theater wouldn't take him back because they were under the impression that Portnoy was going to stay with Avenged Sevenfold. Avenged Sevenfold wasn't looking for anything long-term out of Portnoy. First, you look at age difference. I mean, the rest of Avenged Sevenfold is probably in their late 20s. I'm not even going to say early 30s because they're still a really young band.
Oh, yeah.
But Mike Portnoy is in his mid-40s. And that's the kind of musical relationship where age difference is plays a big part.
Oh, yeah. Because Avenged Sevenfold is a really tight band. I hate to use the term band of brothers because it sounds really cliche, but they were literally a band of brothers. They loved Jimmy the Rev Sullivan, and right after his untimely death, there was a lot of circulation and rumor from Avenged Sevenfold themselves that they might just end the band there because they didn't feel like they could do this without Jimmy, which is why Mike Portnoy was such a huge catch, not just because he is a really talented drummer, but Jimmy really looked up to Portnoy. He was one of the drummers he idled his technique after, so they felt by getting Portnoy, they could kind of get a bit of Jimmy back in there, at least through the sound.
Through the recording.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, Dream Theater is drumless now, drummerless, and Mike Portnoy is essentially jobless. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think Portnoy made Dream Theater who they are. I mean, they have a great guitar player, one of the best shredders of all time, John Petrucci, and one of the best bass players, one of my heroes, John Young, and obviously their keyboard player, Jordan Rudess, is so talented. They're all really talented. Even their vocalist provides a wealth of qualities to that band.
They are very technically talented. For those of you that, most of you probably don't know much of Dream Theater's catalog, for those of you that played Guitar Hero World Tour, there's a Dream Theater song on there, Pull Me Under. That was their only real, I'd say, mainstream hit, and it was back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it wasn't a blockbuster.
Yeah, they put out over a dozen albums, mm-hmm. or a dozen recorded albums. But
they've got a great cult following, which is why many fans were shattered, because the original deal was Portnoy would record the Nightmare album with Avenged Sevenfold, and he would go on tour through their Nightmare tour in the summer, and then just ban. And like Woody said, Portnoy then left Dream Theater saying he wanted to pursue different artistic things. And once he got into Sevenfold, I think he felt like they might keep him full time.
Mm-hmm. See, I think that's wrong. I don't think you should leave your band. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should abandon ship. I don't.
Portnoy, I think Dream Theater has been around for coming on 25 years now.
Oh, yeah, it's close.
And to just leave like that for such a lesser band like Avenged Sevenfold. They have more popularity, but, I mean, they're still young, and I think they're heading in the wrong direction, to be honest. I didn't think Nightmare was nearly as good as City of Evil or Waking the Fallen? Waking the Dead?
Waking the Fallen.
Waking the Fallen.
And Sounding the Seventh Trumpet. That was, you know, one of the...
Sounding the Seventh Trumpet was good. It was a lot more metal than any of their other albums. Mm-hmm. But when it started with their self-titled album, I thought it was going downhill from there. The first time I heard Dear God, I was like, they're not a metal band anymore. They're heading to the direction of pop.
Oh, no, more mainstream. Mainstream.
Yeah, mainstream, yeah. Pop, mainstream. No way.
Pop, well, I mean, such a drastic change from songs like Scream and Afterlife.
Well, Nickelback and Seether, they're definitely going towards the pop direction. They're puddling one.
But I can see bands like Nickelback and Seether covering Dear God pretty well.
Oh yeah,
because that's kind of their
style.
That's their cup of tea.
But if you listen to a lot of their earlier stuff, and even stuff off their City of Evil album, I'm gonna get a lot of negative comments from some fans here, but I would call them, they were a modern-day Iron Maiden. If you listen to like a lot of their song lyrics, a lot of their song styles, you know, especially like the guitar solos, I'd say they're a modern-day Iron Maiden. Were a modern-day Iron Maiden.
That City of Eagle, I think, was their peak. Which brings me to their new drummer, which they've named, they named him about a week ago. Aaron Elijah from Confide. Me and Dave looked up some of their material, and they're decent. They're a lot harder than Avenged Sevenfold ever was. I think he will be a good fit, but it all depends on the direction that Avenged Sevenfold chooses to take.
Dave, I know you really listened to the Nightmare album. I've heard it through once or twice, but I know you've really studied it. I personally didn't feel it could come close, or it did come close to City of Evil or Avenged Sevenfold, and I find that really disappointing because ever since City of Evil, their mainstream or major record label signing, I felt had they gotten this a third kind of knockout album in a row, I don't want to say they could have cemented themselves a legendary, but they could have made themselves so they'd kind of stick around a while and maybe garner some long-term fame as opposed to, oh yeah, that band from 05 to 2000. So what did you think specifically on the Nightmare album?
Right, I bought the album as soon as it came out on iTunes. Heard the single of Nightmare. I was really excited. Portnoy, I thought he was going to be a big asset, and maybe keep him a long time, but that didn't happen, obviously. And it was just a really depressing album. It didn't fit their former style at all. It was kind of just like, we just lost our drummer, let's have every track, be depressing, with a few exceptions. They have some good tracks on there, but other than that, they're going downhill.
I'd say so, too.
I mean, we'll see what Aaron does for him.
Now, I agree with you. When the Nightmare single came out, that came out back in March or April.
I think it was around June.
June? Oh, it came out earlier than that. The album came out in July. But I don't know.
It was a while before the album came out. It was a couple of months at least.
And I got to say, I was really excited for Nightmare. I was a huge fan of Avenged Sevenfold, especially the album Avenged Sevenfold. And hearing Nightmare, it sounded a little different from the stuff they had, because they really rocked hard, I felt, on Avenged Sevenfold. And it sounded a little different, and I kind of put that off to Portnoy being in there. And maybe it's going a little bit of a different direction. And then I heard the rest of the album. There's a lot of like Dear God type songs. They're just really kind of, I don't want to say emo, but they're emo.
That's a good way of putting it.
Because there's a handful of other good songs on there. Welcome to the Family, that has some similar feel and style to it, to part of Afterlife, like the verses in Afterlife. Nightmare, the single, reminded me a bit of Bat Country from the City of Evil release. But I was honestly hoping Portnoy bringing in his kind of, influence would kind of bring him back to their roots a little bit and make him more of the technical, interesting band, that they used to be. Chantel, do you listen to much of Avenged Sevenfold?
Not really? No.
Okay, you've heard probably Beast and the Harlot,
I'm assuming I have.
She's assuming she has. Chantel's our top 40 expert, so, it's...
Absolutely.
If a top 40 person has, knowledge of Sevenfold, that's when they're kind of either selling out or they're reaching in and getting listeners from another group.
With the whole emo thing, they lost their drummer, that's really hard. And it's just like Pink does it all the time. She breaks up with a man and she has this cry poor me soundtrack. But then, next thing you know it, she's got a I'm fine, I don't need you type attitude. I'm not a big fan of Pink, but that's just the way she seems to roll with me. So how do you know that they're not gonna come back and lose the little emo side of them?
I think there's a difference between one woman and a whole band.
Well, it's not just like Pink, but I'm just using that as an example. Other bands do that. Like, they'll go through some sort of loss, or one of them will get divorced and they'll be all sappy in their writing.
Yeah.
But then they grow out of it, they grow into a new, they form as a person and they develop and conquer new writing techniques.
The thing about Avenged Sevenfold, the positive thing about it, is they still have time to grow. They still have plenty of time. They are still young. They, even though their first album came out, I don't know, about 6 or 7 years ago, they still have plenty of time. They still have plenty of time to recover. You know, some people like Nightmare. Some people really liked it.
Yeah, but one of my friends, I'm going to give a shout out to Jace Dolphin here. He's a big Avenged Sevenfold fan. He said Nightmare was probably his favorite album by them.
Yeah. It's all opinion-based when it comes down to this.
And that's why our slogan is eloquent and honest opinions for the everyman from the everyman.
Yes.
That's right. Take that to the bank.
Honest and eloquent.
But getting on to what Chantel said, having someone break up, as in if the Rev had left Sevenfold as opposed to him just dying suddenly, it might be a little different. Because I think
that's a
mourning,
huge difference.
Pardon?
That's a huge
difference. Oh, yeah. Because mourning the loss of a friend is different than mourning the death of a friend.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I wouldn't lose hope in them yet. You know, they're going to accept it. They're going to go through those stages. And they might come back and surprise you all. I don't know. I kind of feel like loss of hope in this room right now for them. I feel like, you know, you can't put them off to the side yet.
My guess is they will come out with a new album within a year and a half. My guess is the overall view of Nightmare is going to be it's kind of a down album, not as good as it could have been, and they'll want to come out and change that and kind of rock out like they used to. Eminem did the same thing when he had his comeback album with Rehab.
Yeah. Relapse.
Relapse. No. I'm sorry, I should really fact check this. But
I should know this. I have the album.
I think it was Rehab was the album he came out with first, and you know, it was his first album since Getting Clean. A lot of people really didn't like that, and within a year and a half, he came out with Relapse, and a lot of people were like, this is the Eminem sound we know and love. His song with Rihanna, Love the Way You Lie, Chantel, you'll attest to that. That was huge. I mean, you couldn't turn on the radio without hearing that.
Exactly, and there's also a second half to that song on Rihanna's album as well that I don't think many people know about. You're right, people love that song.
Yeah.
But it was super mainstream, though. Like, it went all over the place, and you hear it everywhere.
It's not how much this album's going to affect them right now as opposed to how they're going to let it choose to affect them. I know I've done some research on this album. It hasn't garnered the greatest of reviews. One person said Avenged Sevenfold's had three major debuts, or three, you know, major records. Each three sound like a different band, none of which he likes. I've liked the City of Evil band and the Avenged Sevenfold band. I don't know. This is going to be really hard to see where they're going. We'll talk more about this when we come back.
Let's go. She got all that she ever wanted and more. Perhaps a little more than she bargained for. They say she's all the pretty things that you see in magazines. Yeah, she always looks a little bit bored. And you can't always find her walking the mall. A credit line to make sure she got it all. And all the fellas stop and stare when she toss a perfect head. No doubt she knows that she's too good for them all. And all the other people calling her crazy. They say you'll think it's just a little too hazy. Cause she got everything she needs. How could it be but the reality's far from amazing. You see, ain't always what you get. Cause what you're feeling, baby, is legit. I see it happen every day. Watching people go their way, filled with everything that doesn't fit. And all the other people calling her crazy. They say her thinking's just a little too hazy. Cause she got everything she needs. How could it be but the reality's far from amazing. Is
Well, while we were out, we did a little bit of a fact checking on that Eminem album. I feel like a total gomer for saying it wrong, but Relapse was the album that came out in 09 that wasn't very well received, and Recovery, you know, properly named Recovery, was the album that came out in 2010. Another topic of interest we have today, it's a, kind of a minor topic, but the legendary band Pearl Jam putting out a reissue album. Brendan, we know, is... This is a good Brendan show today. He's a huge fan of Pearl Jam. I used to be kind of a, well, I was a skeptic of Pearl Jam. He introduced me, and now I'm a believer of them. David,
he's indifferent.
The reissue album, as I understand it, will be a kind of a compilation of a lot of stuff they've been doing live. I've heard some of the intros on iTunes. I don't have my hands on a copy yet, but there are some pretty popular songs on there that they put on before. Of course, you got your Jeremy, you have Alive, Just Breathe's in there.
Yeah, the album is called Live on 10 Legs.
Mm-hmm.
The 10 coming from their debut album, which is called 10. But it goes back to their roots, and we listened to some samples, and this sounds really close to their old days.
Yeah, the 90s. They're getting pretty old now, too. I feel like at least Eddie Vedder is a little old. He's lost a little bit of the growl in his voice. Mm-hmm. That I loved in his sound, but he's still Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, you know? I definitely heard that within their last album. There's a lot of softer, you know, I wouldn't, kind of folksy, you know.
Yeah.
It kind of felt that way for me, at least a couple songs. But yeah, I've been a Pearl Jam fan since, you know, elementary, and none of my friends were, which was kind of unnerving. Like, I was the only person who liked grunge and just rock from the 90s.
Yeah, but
classic rock.
When we were in elementary, though, that was in the turn of the century, the bubblegum pop, Backstreet Boys, Britney Spears era. That was when grunge was really dying. And, you know, Pearl Jam put out an album then, Vitalogy, which is kind of regarded to be their...
Vitalogy was in 93 and 94. They put out Yield in 97 or 98.
I'm thinking Binaural. Yield, and
then Binaural. They kind of came back with Riot Act, which... kind of, you know, it's progressed into that decade.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they've been kind of hitting a plateau now to where they're still pretty famous, but their material's kind of, you know. Their first three albums, though, the 10, Versus, and Vitalogy. Versus and Vitalogy, they are reissuing. That's their reissue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure when that's coming out. Obviously, probably this spring. So it's probably going to include more live material, and like they did with the reissue of 10, the Legacy Edition, pretty much be the same spiel.
And I'm a huge fan of 10. I will go as far to say 10 may be one of the most underrated rock albums of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I know in the grunge era, Nirvana gets a lot of credit. Their Nevermind album is kind of the Bible or the Torah of grunge music, mm-hmm. but... we'll go on to this in some later episodes, too, on some grunge music. Early Pearl Jam, huge fan of. Later Pearl Jam, not as much. I feel like they've kind of lost their bite they had to them. But it's a legendary band. You know, I still revere them. I don't know if I'm actually going to buy the CD. I may. Would you think you'll go as far to buy the CD?
I think so. I think I haven't bought the 10 reissue yet. But as far as studio stuff goes... I don't know if they're going to be putting out anything in the future. They've been doing a lot of touring, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, they were on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
And they were actually pretty funny. But
they still got a big following.
Yeah, they do, definitely. They still have as good of a following as Green Day now and other bands that are still kicking for some reason.
Caroline Spine.
Oh, crap.
No comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, no comment. We'll talk about Caroline Spine a little bit.
Oh, we will.
Negatively.
But, you know, there are a couple songs I'm missing on this album that I would have liked to see on there. Maybe Better Man.
Better Man's good. Let's see.
I don't think Dissidence is on here. Got the list here. I don't see Dissidence.
Dissident, yeah.
I'm just saying everything wrong today. I sound like such a gomer.
Yeah.
It's been a long week.
You know, looking at it, they don't have a lot of stuff from Verses.
Mm-hmm. Rearview Mirror's on here. Yellow Ledbetter's on here.
And they always close with Yellow Ledbetter, so it's good to see they're sticking with their routine.
A little surprised Even Flow's not on here, because Even Flow, I've read,
And the game Rock Band's told me this, so it's verified by Rock Band. It is their most played song that they do live. It's Even Flow, and I think Alive's up there. Jeremy's obviously up there. Those are the three.
Yeah, Even Flow's
songs.
Not on here. Black's not on here. They left off a few hits, but so does every other band. They don't play every single hit that they've ever done on in one given set. I mean, they play some covers. They play some less-known songs. Like, I'm seeing Porch and Nothing As It Seems. I mean, you never hear that stuff because it's never played on the radio, and it's not hitting up the charts. I mean, they're Pearl Jam. I mean, throughout the years, they've basically deliberately tried to destroy their own success. If you look at their 90s, like, especially the 1996 Grammys, where they got the Grammy, and then Eddie Vedder was just like, I don't know what this means. I don't know what this means. And then he just walks off the stage. And then they refused to make music videos until recently. Mm-hmm. And their whole fiasco with Ticketmaster, it's like they're deliberately trying to not become popular. So they really don't take crap from anyone.
Even though the Jeremy music video they put out back in the early 90s, they had, you know, two different takes of that. That's a very good music video. That gives me chills every time I see it. Partly because, you know, the severity of the song and the lyrics, and also because it sounds like a very 90s song to me. Just kind of in the intro, the do-do-do-do-dum-dum, that, you know, those two chords they strike there, I just screams 90s to me. Anything else to say on that, Wood? What's your perception? What's going to be your 1 to 10? What would you rate this album? Just guessing on
this reissue?
Yeah.
Well, Live on 10 Legs, I like the sound of already, even though I haven't heard much from it. Mm-hmm. But the reissues, you know, I think it's just going to be another reissue, like 10. There might be some new songs on there. We haven't heard much, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I'm psyched for it, but I'll definitely keep an eye out for it because I'm an older Pearl Jam fan.
Yep.
Overall, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, that's all we have on that. It makes a pretty good lead into one of our big main events we're going to be having in the upcoming weeks. We all got together to Taco John one night, and we were debating bands, and, you know, who do we say the best band of all time is, and we got into discussions of you can't compare apples and oranges. And, you know, it was 3 months to NCAA tournament, college basketball was just getting into full swing, so we said, why don't we get together and make a 65 team tournament bracket of what we think the best bands are. We'll post a copy onto the website and have people take votes and see who, you know, just like the tournament, see who we think the best bands of all time are.
Yep.
Dave, we know you filled out a bracket. Woods filled out a bracket. I filled out a bracket. Our kind of on-off DJ Chris filled out a bracket. Chantel just got a copy of the seeds and the bands in her email today. We haven't actually gotten together put together the selection show. That'll be coming in the next few weeks for closer to tournament time. I know the hardest thing to do, we were able to easily collect probably a list of at least 140 bands that we
felt
worthy.
we had more bubble teams than actual 65 teams.
Oh yeah,
we had so many teams on the bubble that, you know, it was really hard to choose those last seeds.
Joe Lenardi's bracketology, he's got nothing on this. This was
got nothing on this.
Yes.
What we did was we narrowed it down to 65 teams for the main tournament, and we had enough bands left over. We have an NIT going on too. We may not have that posted, but
we definitely could get something going like that.
Mm-hmm.
For the bands that didn't make it in, there's a lot of good bands that still didn't make it into my bracket.
And
artists.
As soon as we start this, we're going to put our poll up online, and you can help us vote through it.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to hear from you and see what you think.
Putting a plug for the website real quick. It's www.wix, that's wix.com/Dr. Thunder/highballs/n lowbrows. And between all those words, there are hyphens in there, so it'll be high hyphen or highballs hyphen n hyphen low hyphen brows. So that's our website there. You can also follow us at Twitter at @highb_n_lowb, and we have an email as well. It's the same thing, highb_n_lowb@yahoo.com.
And we also have a Facebook group where we're going to kind of post updates and information on there. There's a link to the website from there as well. And we're really looking forward to this tournament, to be honest. We have our poll site set up. You'll find some more poll questions on there. We'd love to hear your opinions on that. And we're going to take one quick break. And when we're back, we will have Sarah on the line. And we'll be talking about Glee.
Let me tell you a little story about this kid I know. Way back in the day, we used to rock the show. Over time, became the best of friends. You know, brothers and different mothers, we were next to kin. Coulda, shoulda, woulda been a superstar, but he was way too immature to ever get that far. I kinda thought that maybe it would be nice to lend a brotherly hand to give a word of advice. But now you turn and walk away, as if you're just pretending I got nothing to say. I know what you want and what you need, so I'm just gonna sit back and we'll wait and see. Now it's all you, look at yourself. You can't find anyone else who feels the way that you do. There's nobody but you now. Oh no, look what you got. You did this lucky or not. Left behind you, can never find you. Even your mama's out of sight and out of mind too. Because you walked out, you went your own route. The ones you care about left out, no doubt. Screening phone calls, never coming around. You put me in the backseat with everybody in town. So what you doing, man? This just ain't cool, man. I try to help, but you gon' let me, just don't understand. And now you turn and walk away, as if you're just pretending I got nothing to say. I know what you want and what you need, so I'm just gonna sit back and we'll wait and see. Oh yeah, now it's all you, look at yourself. You can't find anyone else who feels the way that you do. There's nobody but you now. Oh no, look what you got. You did this lucky or not.
Here, and we are lucky enough to have Sarah Draffin, our fifth radio host, calling in from Chicago. Sarah, you just want to, you there, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm Sarah Draffin. I'm 19 years old and a vocal performance major at the University of Northern Iowa. I enjoy musical theater and classic rock.
There we go. So, Sarah's here today because she's one of our specialists on the hit Fox show Glee. As you all know, as most of you may know, Glee's on a bit of a hiatus right now between the first half and second half of the season. It's going to debut in a week again after the Super Bowl. Sarah's done a little bit of research. What can you tell us is going to be coming in this next half season, Sarah?
Well, I think everyone should out there should be really excited because our first episode of the second half of the season will kick off with a Super Bowl episode.
Mm-hmm.
In the same week as the Super Bowl, it's probably going to feature Michael Jackson's Thriller in a mashup, and maybe even even Coach Beast singing.
Oh, geez.
I'll be excited for that.
I read it a bit into the Thriller thing. That's their big anticipation. I was a little disappointed to hear Artie will be singing that. At least that's what sources have told me. I'm not a huge fan of the Artie character myself. I think he's a little bland. I don't think his character has that powerful of a voice. I think he's if he wasn't in a wheelchair, I think he was a very disposable character. What do you think, Sarah?
I always liked Artie. I think that as compared to some of the other cast, he's a lot less disposable. And he does seem to do a lot of the white boy rapping around as opposed to actual singing. But I think Michael Jackson will be good for him. Michael Jackson's good for everyone.
Talk to Bruno Mars. I also read in, this will be their most expensive episode they've put into date. I think it said it cost something close to $5 to $6 million, according to Entertainment Weekly.
Yes, I read that as well.
Yeah. What do you think on that? I've been very skeptical on the front half of season two, because it feels like they've kind of gone the route that American Idol went. They've, I don't want to say sold out, but they've bought into their own hype. They've kind of lost themselves in the process, and they're making it more about songs and the flash as opposed to the episodes. What do you think? Sorry, can you say that again? You're breaking up. Can you say that again?
I think that they have definitely lost some storyline in going for the big budget numbers that they have been. But I think, well, the single ladies episode for the last football game was a lot of fun, and I think this one will be just as good.
The single ladies episode, though, that was like episode four of the front half of season one, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think the more they feature extracurriculars outside of just the Glee Club, sitting in the choir room, talking about their feelings,
that's true.
The better it will be. There should actually be a Cheerios championship coming up in the next couple of episodes.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that'll be interesting.
Coach Hugh Sylvester.
So, what else have you heard in the... for what we can look forward to in the plots for this half season of Glee?
Well, I think after Chris Colfer's win at the Golden Globes, we're going to see a lot more of Kurt Hummel. I know you must be excited for that.
Have you heard anything about the development of his character? I know where he last left off at the end of the season. He transferred to that Dalton Academy because he was being harassed by the closeted football player.
Yeah, there is some rumor of his returning to McKinley soon, or whether or not whole friendship with Blaine's going to keep him at Dalton Academy a while longer. We're not entirely positive. I think it all depends on whether or not he and Blaine ever really get together.
I know they left on that, pardon my being harsh, that I think it was a very bad Christmas episode. They left him kind of in that sexual tension stage. They sang Baby It's Cold Outside. Which, you know,
yeah, but will they or won't they?
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's any chance that the Darren Chris Blaine character will switch over to McKinley High?
I don't think so. I think he's a Dalton Academy member, and he always will be. I'm not sure how much I like Blaine that much, actually.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm not a huge fan of the Blaine or the whole Dalton Academy thing. Their teenage dream, I will say, that blew my mind. That was a really good rendition. I'm a huge fan of a cappella music. I thought that was really good. Their Hey Soul Sister wasn't as good. It felt kind of like, let's try the same trick again. But
if you like the teenage dream, then you should get briefed for Katy Perry, because they're going to have a Valentine's Day episode after the Super Bowl episode, which will reportedly feature more Michael Jackson. As well as Katy Perry's firework.
Great. But, no offense to Katy Perry. Well, Chantel will get to have her say on that in future episodes. But I know one of the big talks at the end of last season was Gwyneth Paltrow coming in and doing that episode as the Holly Holiday character. There was potential that people thought she might end up hooking with Will Schuster now that his lady love is with John Stamos. But... there's talk that she might be coming back. Well, actually, there's talk that she is coming back. I've heard the episode might deal with some sex ed stuff. She's a sex ed subs teacher. What do you think the odds are of her and Will kind of getting together?
I think if Will Schuster can make out with Idina Menzel, he can definitely make out with Gwyneth Paltrow.
that was man for Will Schuster, though.
He really is.
What did you think of Gwyneth Paltrow on Glee? Did you think she was that great? Because I know that she got a lot of polarizing reviews. It was either like a lover or a hater. You know, I didn't feel like there was a lot of middle ground.
I used to like Gwyneth Paltrow so much more back in the days of like Shakespeare in Love and all that. I think the reason she was on Glee in the first place was because of her movie Country Strong.
That's true.
And I'm not so sure how much I approve of her in that capacity, but she does a good job when she's on the show and she seems to be having fun. And I wouldn't mind seeing more of her.
I thought she was an interesting character. I felt her character kind of plateaued and petered off towards the middle of the episode. She felt way too immature. At the beginning, she was fun. She was the quirky, you know, young teacher who wanted to act like a kid. Middle of the show, end of the show, when she realized she couldn't do it, they did the Singing in the Rain thing. I don't know.
I like that mashup.
It was cool. It just seemed like a lot of pomp and circumstance, kind of. But one more.
But I think if she comes back, she and Will will definitely have something going for them.
Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting. I also read in EW that the final episode of this half season is going to be set and actually be filmed in New York. And as we know, New York is going to be holding Nationals in the show for the Glee Club. So does that mean they're going to end up beating Dalton and Vocal Adrenaline and go to New York?
I think that's how it's going to have to be, unless they find some magical way to give them all a tie and make them all go to New York.
Mm-hmm.
So they can have the pleasure of seeing Sunshine there as well, or whatever that little agency.
I felt the tie at Sectionals was kind of lame. I felt that unless the other two songs we didn't see by Dalton were mind-blowing, there was no plausible way, even if it was TV, to say that those two groups tied.
You know?
But yeah. I'm not a writer. I'm not making the millions off of this show. I think this show has had, I think, more top 100 singles on the chart at a time than even the Beatles had, I read. Yeah, it's true fact, Dave. So, last thing I want to talk about, I've heard from multiple sources that there will be some kind of shaking and baking with the relationships in the group this next half season. What have you heard on that?
I have heard that the dream team of Santana and Brittany will sort of come back into play.
Really?
I don't know where Tina and Artie stand.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't be surprised if that got shaken up a whole lot more.
Gotcha.
And I'm sure that in the next few episodes, Rachel will be trying any means necessary to get Finn back.
Mm-hmm. And I have heard that the two blonde bombshells, Dinah Agron and I can't even remember the blonde football player's name. I'm not a huge fan of his character either. I think he's just kind of another football player to me. But I hear
his name is Cord Overstreet.
Wait,
and I am not making that up.
Wait, you're serious? His name's Cord Overstreet?
Yes.
So I was able to go through an entire half season of Glee and not realize his name was Cord Overstreet. Oh. Wow.
I would like to have a word with his parents.
Dude, that is a pretty awful name.
Yeah.
My name's a
pretty awful character.
I'm Enharmonic Johansson. Hey, guys. Wow, it's stupid. kind of glad Diana Agron's breaking up with him. I didn't really care for their relationship. It just felt too Barbie and Ken, you know.
Very much so. Although, by the end of the first half of the season, they were pretty much the most solid relationship on the show.
He's such a tool, though. He gave her a freaking promise ring. What is he, like the blonde Jonas brother?
Yeah.
I'm not going to marry you now, but I totally want to marry you in the future. So I'm going to get on my knee, give you this ring, girl I just met 2 months ago. Oh, my gosh, you're hot.
that pretty much sums it up, yeah.
Listen to me. I'm sounding all bitter now. Okay, but is there anything else you want to say on Glee before we go?
I I think that's all I got.
All right, well, thank you very much, Sarah, for calling in. Enjoy your fancy soiree party in Chicago while we here in Iowa freeze ourselves off.
But, I will be so.
All right, take care, Sarah.
Bye.
Well, that was, as we said, Sarah Drafin. She's a valued member of our team. We're all kind of envious she's in Chicago right now. We're not. But who knows? Maybe someday we will I'll move to Chicago and have our podcast based out of there. But in the meantime, we've said all there really is to say. Anything else you guys want to say?
No.
No? Glee and David and Woody are still in their Glee culture shock right now.
Glee. Yeah, I'm about to Glee right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You're so funny, Cord Overstreet, whatever your name is.
I just plain don't like Glee. I've seen one episode, and it was a horrible episode. And I told people that I had seen that episode, and they said, oh, it was a shitty episode to begin with.
Which one was it?
Crappy episode. It was the one with the deaf.
Oh, the deaf choir?
Yeah.
That one is kind of tepid.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. Normally, I'm not a person where I'm, like, one and done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I hear a bad song, though, I judge that band.
I don't.
But when it comes to this show, I heard their rendition of Jump by Van Halen.
Yeah.
And I said, I hate this show. I hate everything it stands for. They butcher everything that they sing. And besides Jane Lynch, I don't like any actor or actress on that show.
I'm going to say I was in the same boat as Woody when I first started off. I am not huge into buying into hype of something. Be it music, be it a movie. For example, I did not like Avatar. I thought it was grossly overrated. Spent way too much money on it. But over the summer, I had knee surgery, so I was laid up, you know, for a couple of weeks. And my sister was lucky enough to borrow the first season of Glee from her boyfriend. And I watched that, and I'm not going to lie, I fell in love with it. I think, especially the first season, the show was very fast, very witty. Contrary to what Woody said, I think a lot of the renditions of their songs are very good and original. Like, I love the song Mr. Schuster sang, the Don't Stand So Close to Me mashup. I think that actually made the Police song better. Not saying he did it better than the Police. No, Sting can sing Circles Around Him. But the bit they added on there, into the chorus especially, I think it filled out the song and made it sound better. But I can understand. I wouldn't say this is a show I'd expect you to like, Wood.
Yeah, this is definitely not a show I'd like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hate to say the covers are better than the original. Even if people think they are, I just hate to say that. There's only a couple cases where I think that's true. Mm-hmm. Like Holy Diver, I think Killswitch is better than Dio on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And Land of Confusion by Disturbed,
I think
they did that better than Genesis.
That was awesome. But there you have our input on Glee. Like we said, if you have any comments you'd like to say, look up our Facebook group on Facebook. It's High Balls and Low Brows. Our email address, hib_n_lowb@yahoo.com. Twitter, same thing without the yahoo.com. And thank you very much for tuning in. We're going to try to make this a 1.5 to 2 week show. Hopefully you'll follow our podcast, spread the news to your friends. And also be on the lookout for Interlude. I kid you not. Watch out for Interlude. So, thank you very much. This has been High Balls and Low Brows, episode 1.